So my presentation today is on improving adolescent immunization rates with a phone call-based reminder recall system. And Northeast Valley is a joint commissioned accredited FQHC. Our mission is to provide comprehensive health care to residents of Los Angeles County, in particular with concern for the low-income and medically underserved populations. We have 12 licensed clinics, including a mobile clinic for the hard-to-reach homeless. We provide almost 48,000 patients with over 170,000 primary care visits in 2006. Over 90% of those are below 200% of the federal poverty level. 47% are uninsured, and more than 83% are Latino. So I just have to put a plug for our new clinic that opened yesterday. It's a collaboration between LA Unified School District. It's on the site of a middle school. Actually, LA Unified gave us the land. LA County built the building, and Northeast Valley is providing services. And it's a unique model because it's a school-based clinic, but will also be open to the community, providing services to children and adults. We are also the fifth largest WIC clinic in the state, providing 68,000 monthly visits across 14 WIC sites in LA County. So we give a lot of shots. In 2007, almost 34,000 childhood immunization visits. Over 15,000 were given to 0 to 2 year olds, 6,500 to 10 to 18 year olds. We probably should be giving more. And there are currently 6,743 active 13 to 15 year olds in our registry. We use the Los Angeles Orange Immunization Network called LINC. So I need, before I get to our immunization project, I really need to review what we did for childhood immunizations, because I think we need to look to our interventions and our successes in our childhood immunization program to use that and learn from for our adolescent program. So I know this is going to sound surprising, but in 2002, we actually, despite a lot of effort, and I'll go over quickly what we did, our immunization rates for 24 to 35 month olds at our five primary care clinics increased to 49%. And we really were doing a lot. It wasn't the registry back then, we had another system, a computerized immunization tracking system. It was a standalone system, but it allowed us to do monthly recall postcards. We also did the old-fashioned shoebox with reminding patients to come for their next shots. The system allowed us to prompt providers, so when the patient came in, we got a sticker. It said what shots this child needs today, and we put it on the progress notes. We did practice assessments, provided feedback on our up-to-date rates. We educated our providers. We included missed opportunities. However, in 2002, we received funding from the State Department of Health Services Immunization Branch, and that was a three-year project, and it's continuing through June 2008. And we were going to implement a case management project. So we implemented it at four of our primary care sites, and we chose one as a control site. And what we did was we looked, first of all, of course, at our baseline rates, and then we ran not up-to-date reports. So we actually got the names and telephone numbers of the kids who weren't up-to-date at six different intervals. We identified what the milestones were at each of those intervals, and if the child didn't meet those milestones, they were entered into our case management program. So we looked at 3, 5, 7, 13, 20, and 24-month intervals. And every child not up to date at any one of those points were enrolled into the case management system until they were 3 or they were up to date. And our case management system consisted of a phone call system. We called the parents or guardians, and we informed them that their child wasn't up to date and what shots they needed. Now, this isn't exactly true. Now we're making 250 calls a month. Our up-to-date rates are much better now, but when we first started, that number of phone calls were much higher. The case manager was able to talk to the parent, possibly schedule immunization appointments, and provide information on insurance if that was needed, answer any questions. We have two ways patients can get immunizations at our organization. One is by going to see their pediatrician, and the other one is through our express immunization services. So we offer another approach if they're, many of them are not even Northeast Valley patients. After we tried three times, if we weren't able to reach the parent or guardian, we sent a postcard. And then, of course, if the postcard was returned or the parent said they were no longer coming to Northeast Valley, we were able to clean up our data. And we also identified some that were lost to follow-up. So this is just a chart of what the phone call system, we documented what the results of every phone call was. And then this is a case management log where every single child was checked at each of these intervals to see if they were up to date. So after the first year, up-to-date rates improved significantly. It increased to 80%, and the control site improved a little bit, but the intervention was statistically significant. And we really feel that no other intervention that we used at Northeast Valley was as successful as this intervention. As a result, we implemented it at all five of the primary care clinics. Up-to-date rates the next year went to 93%. In 2005, they went to 95%, and they've been above 95% ever since. So those are just our graphs. It's a great graph. However, so now it was time. A few years had passed. I talked about how successful we were, and decided that we really needed to do something for another target group. And the success that we had with our child immunization rates did not transfer over to our adolescent population. We had no funding. There was no reminder recall activities at all for this population. So despite this, we knew we had to do something to improve immunization rates. So we looked at our baseline rates for our 13-year-olds, and I came up with our own vaccine criteria, which I'll show you in a minute. And even though we didn't think it was going to be as effective, we did opt for the less expensive postcard-only system, hoping that it would be different for our adolescents and that we would improve immunization rates. So we would send postcards for TD, for those missing TD. And yes, our theory was, I thought our providers were really good at not missing opportunities to immunize. If they were giving one immunization, they would give all of them. And so we thought if they came in for TD, they would TD or Tdap, they would come in for they would get the rest of their vaccines. So what we did was we just sent postcards every month for adolescents who turned 13 the prior month. So this was the criteria we used. We actually looked at primary series for DTaP and the booster. We looked at polio. We looked at three doses of hepatitis B. We also looked at Hep A because we'd been giving Hep A in California for a number of years. Two doses of MMR, one of varicella, and then we assessed separately for TD and Tdap boosters. So this is our graph for postcards after 1 year of sending postcards every single month to adolescents who turned 13 years old the month before. Actually, some of the sites actually decreased, and I can't figure out why, but that was, I would say, not a success. And that was our up-to-date rate for TD only. As you can see, if I can go back for just a minute, so our up-to-date rate for the vaccine criteria that I showed was about 34% to start with and about maybe 35% to end. And TD only started about 58% and ended a little bit lower than that. So clearly no improvement, and we decided we needed to do something else. We still didn't have any extra money, but we decided that we knew phone calls were successful with our childhood immunization program, and we decided that we needed to start calling these patients. We also decided to change our intervention group, and we decided to focus on the 12-year-olds instead of the 13-year-olds because we hoped maybe they needed a little time to get immunized, and then we would still assess 13-year-olds. This turned out to be about 175 phone calls every month. So similarly, we looked at 12-year-olds who turned 12 the previous month, and we looked if they were not up to date for the TD or Tdap. We would make the three phone calls. We would be able to clean up some of our data, and that's a part of the improvement that we saw. And we updated the status in our immunization registry, and we continued to assess 13-year-olds. So that was the problem. Our intervention was when they first turned 12, and we were still looking at up-to-date for 13-year-olds. So we still didn't see any success in 2007, and that was for all vaccines, and that's for TD only. However, we really knew this was going to be successful, so we looked at We knew that, again, that we needed to wait till those 12-year-olds turned 13 in order to see the success. So we actually decided to look at up-to-date rates for 12-year-olds. So we used the same criteria that we had used for 13-year-olds, and we looked at our 12-year-olds. So what we found with the 12-year-olds who had received the intervention, about, again, 38% of 13-year-olds were up-to-date, and about 80% of 12-year-olds were up-to-date. And again, with TD only, it was about 52%. But when we looked at the 12-year-olds that received the intervention, it turned out to be about 92% up to date. So what are we going to do in the future? First of all, we're going to change the criteria a little bit to make it more consistent with the NIS or the Healthy People 2010 goal. So we'll look at one booster of Tdap or TD, three hepatitis Bs, just so we can compare our data, you know, across the nation. And then, of course, we'll also look at the individual single antigens of MCV4, HPV, and our second varicella vaccine. So at least in our setting, and I know there's some mixed reviews about recall postcards and how successful they are. Some have found more success with them than us. But based on our experience, both with childhood and adolescence, we didn't see any improvement just based on the postcards. It helps to call the patient because you're able to identify who's yours, who's going elsewhere, who's moved away. That's really critical. And the third point is really important. Most parents that we contacted were not aware that their adolescent needed immunizations. And we really found the same thing when we called about childhood immunizations. Parents, I would say for the most part, wanted to bring their children in to get them immunized if they knew they weren't up to date for their immunizations. And the same thing is true with our adolescent population. And lastly, not least, it gives us an opportunity to encourage that very, very important preventive visit. It is a challenge to get our adolescents in for the preventive visit. I went to a presentation yesterday where they talked to parents, and I guess 80% of the parents thought they were in for a preventive visit. And so I think parents who go in for an acute visit don't really know the difference and think that that is a preventive visit. But most of our, when the adolescents do come in, they're for sick visits. It's often very difficult. There's no immunization records at all that we might have. And it's a challenge for providers to start immunizing a 14-year-old when you don't know what their history is. So getting them those immunization records in, this is what we can do when we talk to them on the phone, making sure they bring their immunization records in, getting them scheduled for an appointment, and if need be, coming to Express Immunization Services so that they at least could be up to date for their immunizations. Thank you.
Thank you very much to all of our speakers this morning. We'd like to open up the floor for questions. If anyone has a question or a comment, I just ask that you bring it up here to the middle aisle where there's a microphone so that everyone can hear you. Thanks.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
While we're waiting for a question from the floor, can you tell at all, there's two things. One is administrative. If you take all of the kids who have moved out of your system, your rates go sky high. But that doesn't mean that the community is better vaccinated or protected from disease. Can you tell from the number of doses administered which, do you believe that your community is better vaccinated because a lot more doses were administered?
I wish that clearly you have a very good point. If you improve, that we have not been able to determine if we what percentage of our improved up-to-date rate is attributed to patients coming in. Although with the pediatric charts, you can see how many are actually moved, and we keep track of that, and how many are now up to date because we follow and track those. So there's a certain proportion that are no longer ours, and we are improving the database. There's no denying that, and there are others that clearly did not know their child is up to date and have come in. But I wish. It would be a great study to do of how much is attributed to coming in and getting vaccinated.
I'm Jerry Fairbrother, and I had two questions. That was one of them.
But it looked like from your data that you can tell that. You know how many, you know who you removed from the denominator, so you know what fraction of the improvement, you can calculate what fraction of the improvement is due to cleaning up the denominator and what is real improvement. So that was one of my questions. The second question was, when you made phone calls to the 12-year-olds, to whom did you speak, the parent or the 12-year-old?
We're calling the parent. I really feel that the parent is still making the decisions about their adolescent getting immunized, and you know there's people, individuals who've suggested, you know, texting the teenager, but it's really the parent who's bringing the child in for their immunizations, and we talk to the parent.
And then would you do the same thing if you were trying to reach out to an older adolescent, a 15 or 16-year-old? Or when would you switch, if ever?
I think when we're talking about adults, which is 18, in my opinion, it's 18-year-olds when they're coming in without parental, you know, consent and coming in on their own for immunization. So that's when I would switch.
Hi, thank you. Very interesting. David Eagle from the New York City Department of Health. Just a comment. Our registry data shows that because of the Tdap requirement for school, that at the 11 and 12-year-old visit, they're getting their Tdap. We also found that 50% of them were not getting the other vaccines at that time, so that we are targeting educational efforts at providers, again, to let them know that the recommendations are for all of the vaccines to be given at the 11 and 12-year-old visit. But the Menactra and the HPV vaccine for girls were not being given at the same visit. So I think targeting the providers is still extremely important.
I agree. I think the fact that in our state, none of those vaccines are required for school entry. So I think maybe because Tdap is required, that the provider is only focusing on that vaccine.
I'm Dana Hayworth from Oklahoma Indian Health Service. Have there been any studies done with emergency room physicians, whether they're using the recommendations? Because the teenagers are such a high-risk injury group. Are they given Tdap? Because we have kids that come in and say, I got my vaccine at the ER somewhere, but they don't know which one they received as far as TD or Tdap.
Stan Schaefer from University of Rochester is here, and he's doing a study on complementary and alternative settings for adolescent immunization. Stan, do you want to make a comment?
They are giving Tdap in emergency departments.
Stan, it'd probably be good to hand the mic.
We're currently investigating whether or not emergency physicians would also be willing to give other adolescent immunizations like meningococcal conjugate vaccine and HPV vaccine, as well as influenza vaccine.
Samantha Gottlieb, I'm unaffiliated. I have a question for Dr. Hemiston about the qualitative data. You mentioned providers being less familiar with particular illnesses such as HPV affecting their willingness or interest in the vaccine because, for example, HPV, most pediatricians don't deal with HPV. So I was wondering whether you did any comparison between the family practitioners and the pediatricians, because the family practitioners, I assume, would have had experience with HPV and the consequences, and if you looked at that at all.
During the focus groups, remember these are small numbers of people, and so it's not like a quantitative study where you compare. But in yours, I forget if there was a did you ever ask about HPV? In general, family physicians don't vaccinate as well as pediatricians. It's just different, you know, they've got a million other things to do. But I don't know. I don't know. I've never seen that. No. And during the focus groups and interviews, I didn't necessarily know, you know, who was a pediatrician and who was a family physician.
Scott Hamstra, Indian Health Service, Arizona. Very interesting that you get so little response to your postcards, which has always been our forte and what we do as well. And I would wonder if you could talk a little bit about what, when you talk to them by phone, what did they say about those postcards? Did they even acknowledge that they got them? And we have two problems with that. One is they only check mail once a month or so. The other one is our phones don't stay intact. So how much problem did you have with numbers not being up to date and changing all the time?
Yeah, numbers are always a problem. We probably reach about 50 to 60% of the population that we call. With our childhood immunization program, we continue to send postcards. I can't give it up, every single month to
actually 0 to 5-year-olds who aren't up to date, who missed a vaccine in the prior month. And in addition to that, we have the case management program. So we do them concurrently, but we don't really ask a parent about receiving a postcard. So that's an interesting comment. With our adolescents, again, just if we can't get a hold of them, we will try the postcard system and hope that it works.
Margaret Bernard Howe from Oklahoma, and I'm just wondering if, did you ever think about sending educational material through the school system to the adolescents to take home to their families?
We participated in the preteen vaccine week, which was in January, and did an event at one of our middle schools that we have a school-based clinic, and that was somewhat successful. We got a number of kids immunized that day, but it really wasn't open to the community, so that's definitely an approach. I really think that specific approach of calling that parent and saying your child isn't up to date for these shots is it's time-consuming, but a very, very effective approach.
I just want to mention, too, this is senior citizens, but in talking to senior citizens, they had the information, they had seen billboards about flu shots, but they said, I have diabetes, so that doesn't apply to me. Or they said, I'm a healthy senior, so that doesn't apply to me. The mass media about vaccines doesn't apply to me. But when we have a similar program in Rochester, New York, and we found that when you call somebody and say, your doctor says you need a shot, that does apply to me.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Savita Kumar from Palm Beach. I'm sorry. Did you make calls in the evenings and the weekends for the working parents?
Yeah, we do try to make calls. We start the first hour of the day. We try to catch a number of people there. The last hour of the day, my staff sometimes does make calls in the evenings and the weekends as well. But primarily, they don't like to work evenings and weekends, so we try to reach as many at those particular hours. So we use first hour and last hour of the day.
One more difficult question. I admire what you're doing to increase Tdap in adolescents. But when the parents are coming in with these adolescents, are you asking them if there's a pregnant woman, a newborn, or infant in the home, and if the parent is up to date on their Tdap?
Oh,
I'm sorry.
It's a really, really good question. We're very lucky. We're an FQHC, and we can give immunizations to every kid 18 years and under who walks through our door, whether or not they qualify for our VFC vaccines. We're very, very lucky. We are not as lucky with our adults. Our insured rate that I mentioned included adults and children. Really, our adults, 75% are uninsured.
But you could plant a seed.
Yeah, it is one of my major challenges. And postpartum visit for our women's health patients as well need to get the Tdap.
Can you talk about the cost of the program?
Of this program?
Yeah, the case management.
Okay, well, I've just told my staff for the adolescents that they're doing it, and so we had...
I didn't hear the question.
Oh, I'm sorry, the cost of the program. So with our adolescents, as I mentioned, we had no funding, so as usual, we just do more with the same staff. With our childhood program, it is fairly expensive. It took one person full-time to implement this program, but at up-to-date rates of over 95%, well, so the positive is it's going to start out really time-consuming, but as you improve, it will actually become less time-consuming. So, but it did take one full-time case manager to handle this program.
All right. If there are no other questions, don't leave yet. I have announcements. First of all, I'd like to thank you again for coming to this wonderful session and our speakers for a really great job.